This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today we're going into a space in this world that we know all too little about. We should know much more about it. In fact, it should be a part of every human life and every human soul. Fortunately, we have with us today someone who is very much in tune with this level of consciousness that we have lost touch with. Zohara Hieronymus is here. She's the wife of Bob Hieronymus of 21st Century Radio. She's an award-winning radio broadcaster, social justice and environmental activist. She's a professional artist and a fabulous one. She founded the Ruscom Mansion Community Health Center in Baltimore in 1984. She's hosted the national radio program Future Talk. She did that until 2008. She still co-hosts 21st Century Radio with Bob. And she's the author of books, and one of which we're going to be talking about today. Her website is www.zoharaonline.com, and you'll be able to click through to that from the Dreamland page. Today, we're talking about animals and our relationship with animals. So welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you, Whitley. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's exciting to have you because it is an extraordinary and exciting subject here. Your book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, is very enlightening and illuminating. And folks, over the course of this show, we're going to find out exactly what all of these white animals mean. What is their significance in the world? But first, I want to talk about a couple of things. One is, first, our relationship with animals. Something is deeply wrong here. Deeply wrong. You talk to that for a few minutes, if you will, Zoe.
If we look to elder lore and indigenous traditions worldwide that still exist, we find a right relationship with our animal kin. Kin is the key word. Dr. Gay Bradshaw, who wrote Elephants on the Edge and developed in psychology something called trans-species psychology, has shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that animals and us share in many cultural similarities. We have love, we have emotion, we have memory, we have play, we have community, we have history. And the indigenous peoples understand this. Animals aren't less evolved than us. They just have a different job to do. If we think about it rationally, the earth will do beautifully if we bolster the ecosystems and habitats of our animals. And it doesn't need humans. We all think, oh, my God, if we go extinct. Well, the truth is, the earth does very well without us. It will not do well without its stewards. And its stewards do not happen to be humans right now. It happens to be the animal kingdom. And what happened for me, Whitley, is having been an animal lover my whole life and an advocate for the ecosystem and all those good activist works that I've done since I was 12, I have also been a telepath where I can talk to animals. And in 2011, I decided to take my skills outside the boundaries of domestic animals. And what happened was I was firstly relieved to discover that like dowsers or remote viewers or anybody who practices non-local consciousness, that yes, I could come into rapport with wild animals that I never met, I never knew, I had no relationship to personally, but they're available to us. So that's the first thing. Is all the animals that are in each of our locales, wherever we live, are anxious to be our partners in restoring, in preserving, and in conserving our environment.
And we are desperate. As I sit talking to you, I'm in California, in Southern California. It is about 92 outside right now. It should be where I am, about 72. We are facing an afternoon that could turn into an inferno when the wind picks up. It shouldn't be like this. The hurricanes, the terrible hurricanes that hit the Americas should not have happened.
And I also like to add that also might be in part because of the amount of weather engineering that we've been doing for 30 years. It's not discussed publicly, and I'm not just talking about chemtrails. I'm talking about much more serious, sophisticated weather engineering, for warfare, for human depopulation, and for other nefarious and sometimes reasonable, you know, challenges. But it has so undone our meta systems on top of all the obvious things we've done with air pollution and water pollution and food contamination, et cetera. But you're right. And, you know, the interesting thing for me about this is, having been an activist my whole life and the amount of fear that it can generate in us, the animals are saying, stop the fear and get to work. The answer is to improve the life around you. So while I was having this dream experience for 4 years, and I'll share with that shamanic dreaming what that is, but I was meeting with the bear, the lion, the wolf, the elephant, and the buffalo, and those are the four apex guardian mammals that are talked about at length in White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. And what they said is, save as many of us as you can. And the reason for that is they are each guardians over enormously significant ecosystems, from the rainforest to the savannas to the rivers to the fields to the plains. And
well,
without,
you know,
them,
if the lion population continues to decline like it has been, they will be extinct in 20 years, and elephants along with them.
Oh, absolutely. With all of these mammals, they are all facing extinction. You know, I think the challenge for all of us is appreciating the World Wildlife Fund had a report in 2014 that since between 1970 and 2010, we've lost 52% of our mammals, our birds, reptiles, amphibians, and fish.
And
that's 27,000 species a year.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they have something to tell us, these animals.
Yes.
And before we get into that, I want to talk about the relationship between the sixth extinction and the sixth sun, the Mayan sixth sun, and science's prediction of the fact that we are in the sixth extinction. But before we do any of those things, free dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break, and you're going to listen carefully to these ads, and I am hypnotizing you right now so that you will do exactly what they say while we sit here and sip our tea and wait to come back. This is Whitley Strieber. We're talking to Zoe Hieronymus today, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, her book, her website, ZoharaOnline.com. Before we stopped for a few minutes for our free dreamlanders, I started to ask you about the sixth extinction and the sixth sun and the relationship between the two, which you touch on in the book in some interesting ways. Could you get us into, first, what is the sixth extinction?
Well, it's the most massive extinction since our last one in the last glacial age. And that's, interestingly enough, the connection to the White Spirit Animals, because all of the elder lore, whether in Asia, India, the United States, Africa, is all about the last ice age, and that these white-coated animals, unlike the rest of their species, are reminders of the last ice age, meaning the last extinction, and that the prophecies about them actually suggest, as does the Maya sixth sun, which is when all traditions will intermingle and elder lore will bring us to our awareness of heart and higher intelligence, is that they are basically a very similar process of the two sides of the coin, loss and leverage. The sixth extinction is caused in part because of human activity, which is why Paul Crutzen has now called it the Anthropocene. Our activity since the 1800s has so changed the meta systems that we can actually say it's human-caused extinction, in part. There are also natural cycles, as we look at, that go across millions of years, like the Maya look at. You know, they have fascinating calculations of how fast things are changing, and what they say now is we're in the ninth wave, which repeats itself every 32 to 36 days. When they started their calculations, we're talking about millions of years, and then it was hundreds of thousands, and then hundreds. Now we're down to literally every month we have an opportunity to access our greatest vibration, our most refined frequency. And that's what the White Spirit Animals themselves represent, which is they are the prophets of the wild. They come to share with us that, yes, they are facing extinction, and so are we. But if we are diligent about preserving them, the bear, the lion, the wolf, the elephant, the buffalo, let me add, the whale, the porpoise, all these matriarchal animal cultures, they can then take care of the ecosystems that are collapsing. Because when you take away the top of an ecosystem, the whole thing falls apart. If we preserve them, unlike our habit of eliminating and killing them for profit or personal delight in murder, which is a tragic story, but true, we then can make the Earth more resilient as we move through these drastic climate changes and Earth changes.
So, and we do hope to move through them because we're in them right now. Obviously, all of this business about climate change denial, I've noticed that the people who used to spout out that stuff have quieted down recently. They're afraid to talk now because they know they've been delaying change for a long time. About the only person I know of in public life who's willing to openly say climate change isn't real and global warming won't happen is President Trump himself. And he is, of course, destroying the Environmental Protection Administration, hoping to roll back the Clean Air Act. He is planning to place tariffs on the import of solar panels from China, meaning that our solar industry will collapse, and that will leave us with coal and oil again.
Yeah, it's all tragic. This entire administration is a great tragedy for our nation and
the
world.
Oh, yeah. I used to be I'm always very careful because my listeners are Close Encounter witnesses, most of them.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to interfere with their ability to explore with me by bringing up politics, but this has gone too far.
It has, but
yeah,
you know,
it's
it also
beyond.
Is in keeping with the astrological signatures, and I do want to give you the good news. The good news is Jupiter has just moved into Scorpio, and so has the Sun. So all those things that are hidden, both within ourselves in terms of our great talents and aptitudes of psi-related phenomenon, our non-local consciousness will grow, but also those things that have been hidden will be revealed. Scorpio is a great challenge, you know, of how to handle energy that is so deep within us and deep within the recesses of our consciousness. But with Jupiter there, it's going to really expand that capacity. So when we look, for example, at the animals and they're imploring us, because they came to me in a waking vision, I didn't think, oh, I have this great idea. Let's talk about the white spirit animals. In fact, it was a waking day vision. And I stood in awe of them as if I were before these revered teachers, and I asked them, this was back in 2013, what can I do for you? You know, why are you here? And they told me, we want you to tell our story. And they meant to tell it as a collective, not as one at a time, because in doing so collectively, they insisted I'd have a better understanding. And they were right, because what you immediately notice is that they're all matriarchies, meaning their cultures are centered around the mother and their offspring, and they implore us as humans to restore this ethos of care, which patriarchy has undone, continues to use as a destructive tool in what I refer to as a death economy. You know, if you think about war and the ecosystems and all the things you mentioned under this administration, these are all death tools. They're not tools for life. So what we all want to focus on is wherever we live and whoever we know and whatever we know about ourselves is to really do the best each of us can, even if it means just pray each day. Prayer is a very, very powerful human tool.
You know, there's such a sense of urgency that you mention in just right in the introduction to the book, and I feel it too. I want to talk a little bit about our relationship with our world and the sense of separateness that we feel. We're in many respects very, very different from the animals. We look different. We do different things. We have changed the planet profoundly in ways that no other species ever would or could.
Exactly.
And we're in a situation where we live in a world that they can't understand. Not that they simply aren't taught, but they can't understand it in the same way that we do. There is no way you're ever going to teach a chimpanzee, a gorilla, or an African gray parrot how a car works. You can't. It's beyond them. Now, they live in a world that has, in a way, gone beyond them. and that is self-destructing. So, you know, there is some kind of a restoration needed there. And when we get back, Free Dreamlanders, we're going to find out from Zoe what it is, because she knows. We'll be right back. We're talking to Zoe Hieronymus. Her book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. If you get into this, you get off your duff, and you actually go buy a copy of it and really read it, it will change you, and in an interesting way, it will open you and make you bigger in ways you didn't even know you were small. That's what it did for me. Her website, especially for this book and what she's doing in this area, is whitespiritanimals.com. That's whitespiritanimals.com. So go there and get involved, because this is a new aspect of waking up, and it's very real. It's very real. They are here. They are ready to interact with us. And Zoe, you do that all the time. You know how I want to handle this? I want to start by you telling us the story of Matata. And from there, we'll work our way into, for each one of us, listeners, and for me, building a new relationship with the world around us, because that's what we're doing today.
Yeah, amen to that. And thank you for, you know, the saying what the book did in terms of your own understanding, because it really was a journey for me of, firstly, the animals came to me and asked me to do this. It took me a couple of years before I even submitted it to my publisher, Inner Traditions Bear and Company. I spent dreaming with the animals, and I'll get to Matata because that's where she comes in. I practice what's called shamanic dreaming, which is before you go to sleep, I would ask each specific animal one at a time over a period of months at a time only, lion, I need to know what it is you think we need to do. And they would tell me, and lion, by the way, said, close the ozone hole. And by the way, close the hole in your heart, you know, that keeps you from knowing that everything is connected by love and reverence. Matata is a bonobo. Well, she's deceased now, one of the longest lived bonobos in captivity. And a scientist who worked with the bonobos to prove their intelligence, Sue Savage Rumbaugh, and I had interviewed her about her work with the bonobos and her hope to give them autonomy while they were in captivity and raise money to take them all into freedom in the Congo, which she was unable to do. But after we spoke, a week later, all of a sudden, there's a bonobo. I have psychic vision as well, and I've had this since I was a child, but I've worked to cultivate it. Like every practitioner of any art, you have to practice to keep it healthy. All of a sudden, I have my white shepherd dog with me named Bella, and she's terrified, and I see a bonobo standing in my bedroom. And truthfully, I have to tell you this, she was masturbating. And I'm thinking, oh my God, people are going to think this is so weird. I only found out later that's very common. That's a greeting. That meant, hello, we love you. Hello, you're one of us. She came into my bedroom, and she basically started talking to me. And I had to call the scientist, Sue, a few weeks later after I sort of just took into my... So actually, it was probably a few days later initially. And I said, you know, Matata has just showed up in my bedroom and wants to have a talk, as she says. And then I called Dr. Stanley Krippner, who most people know, and he's a great educator on shamanism and Maimonides Dream Laboratory and so many important things that have developed from Saybrook Institute over the decades. But he said, I said, well, what do you think I should do? Should I, like, go on and have conversations with Matata? And he said, well, sure, and keep good records. So I did. I have about 32 recorded conversations that I had telepathically with Matata, though I had many others. And this will sound strange to some of you, but she would just call me up on what I call the telepathic line. And I would always try to take her call, whether I was out grocery shopping or walking with a dog. Sometimes I'd say to her, you know, I got to call you back. She would then begin to tell me stories about the Ice Age, about meteorites, about earth changes, even to the point of saying the bonobos and humans are very similar, which they are genetically. We're like 2% different at that. She said the bonobos used to take the discarded humans and raise them, and the bonobos actually interbred with humans. And that the reason that she's so concerned about all of us, like all the other mammals are, is that if we don't preserve them and their ecosystems, then we will also see extinction in a way we don't need to. Their point is that we can create some resiliency on the earth, both internally by opening our hearts and our minds to all of life, talking to trees, talking to the birds, when you see a dead animal on the road, you know, saying a prayer over its spirit. I think the essential thing, Whitley, that Metata and all of these animals are saying to us is come into loving communion. Come into loving communion with all of life, because all of life is connected. You know, we may experience ourselves as separate from each other or separate from nature, but we're not. And not only are we not separate, every thought we have, every emotion we have is substantial. We may not be able to see it, but it exists. So Metata really was the one that took me by the hand and showed me what I was capable of doing 2 years before the white spirit animals showed up. And one thing, I just want to share one thing she said to me one day. She goes, you know, we don't judge humans. She said, they lost their feet when they got wings. And what she meant was when we discovered the airplane, we lost our rootedness to the earth. We lost our love of the earth.
Well, something is certainly very wrong, because ever since we got the airplane, we've been killing each other with
quicker,
much quicker. I mean, it is the thing that is hard for us to understand is that we haven't changed at all since we came into being. We're still a very violent and intense species. And what has happened is, as our skills have improved, so has our power to hurt each other and the world around us. I want to talk a little bit now about this sense of, we talked a little bit about the interconnectedness of life, but you discuss an ecology of spiritual beliefs and a plague of dissociation later in the book.
Yeah.
That I found very interesting. What is this plague of dissociation? Because I see it all around me, and I know that we had listeners who will have turned this show off already. And if you are listening still, it's because you're waking up, and that's important. And they will have done that because they hear things about relationship with animals, and they hear things about environmental problems, and they just can't take it. But what is wrong here? Why can't we face what the reality is?
Well, dissociation is a psychological term which refers to why it is anybody can do something they know inherently is wrong, whether it's minor, throwing trash out the window, or major, you know, not following EPA laws and polluting whole waters, or in Texas, you know, or someplace else, giving people water that's contaminated by hazardous chemicals. Dissociation is sort of like, I call it the room of denial. You know, something, as we go to do something or we participate or we don't work to stop something that we know is wrong, we just go into our comfortable sofa room of dissociation. It's our room of denial. Dissociation is really, for me, that's the great plague of humanity, where we, since the Cartesian materialism took hold, we have been trained to believe that we are only in existence while we breathe, and that our consciousness is limited by the edge of our skin and our brain. And the truth is, we're eternal spiritual beings having a short-term physical experience. The animals know that. The animals are very much a spirit being and a physical being. You know, in Kabbalah, they teach that we have an animal soul and a human soul, and the animal soul is already perfected. If you watch an animal, they do their job perfectly. They're nobly. They never go off course. Humans, however, need to be educated spiritually, and I think the great poverty is that we have not educated our heart. We haven't given ourselves the opportunity of spiritual maturation along with our technological development, which means we've focused so much on the left hemisphere of our brain, the linear, the rational, you know, the technological, and we have let go of our intuitive, the right hemisphere of the brain, which takes in whole, that sees everything related, that is inclusive, not exclusive, that is able to appreciate that all things have a purpose. And our lack is in not having enough reverence or regard for appreciating that everything has purpose, and that we are not the creator. We're meant to be co-creators, but co-creation means coming from a place of love, of humility, and of a great imagination for community wholeness.
So we, to regain this, and we did have it for a long time, let's talk a little bit about the animals, the particular animals that you have brought up. The bear, let's start with the bear.
The bear is so magnificent. And folks, what I did was I dreamt with each of these animals before I studied them. So I would have an authentic experience of them before I read what, you know, indigenous people or those who are biologists say. And what I experienced with bear in my dreams is that bear is the major healer. Bear is, I like to call her, chief of medicine. And she showed me smudge medicine and smoke medicine and the kinds of medicines we see in Native traditions. Bear is the one who taught elders how to find herbs that heal. And they teach us now to bear witness. Bearing witness is an action. It's not a nothing. To bear witness means to be awake, to tell what you see, and do your best to take part in changing what needs to be changed. They also tell us to prepare ahead of time. That's what they do. They tell us to bear children. And if we look at the sky in the North Pole, which they have province over, it said that they are the guardian of where all the longitudes on Earth come together. Bear really is the healer of humanity. And that's the first animal. And when you think about their great range, and in this case, I looked at the white bear, which is in the rainforest of British Columbia, I have to say, the good thing is that they are now going to conserve 19 million acres of rainforest as a result of the great white bears being seen coming into human contact. And that's what's happening worldwide with all these white spirit animals.
We're going to talk about the white spirit animals in just a couple of minutes. But before that, I really want to get through
the
other specific animals. But, you know, before we go on, I want to just a bit of an aside. A lot of us have animal companions, spirit animals. Mine is the dog, which is only mentioned indirectly in your book, and I want to talk about that because it's mentioned in context.
Well, dog is wolf.
Of the wolf, yeah.
Dog is wolf.
Well, I want to learn more about
wolf
then, because I've been very connected with wolves. I wrote, my first novel was called The Wolfen, and then I wrote a book called Wolf of Shadows, which was a children's book, a young adult book, about wolves, a boy and his mother becoming part of a wolf pack after a nuclear war. This was written a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I'm very into that. And
me too.
So when we get back, I'd like to talk about wolf, and then we're going to go on to the other spirit animals, and then we're going to talk about the signs and what do the white spirit animals mean. Subscribers, will be right back. Free Dreamlanders, goodbye for now. Come on into the fold, join the community, and just keep on keeping on like the rest of us are going to do right now. Our guest today is Zoe Hieronymus. Her book, very powerful, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change. Her website, whitespiritanimals.com. Now let's get into some specifics. I have a very intimate relationship with dog, and I guess with wolf. My relationship with dog is powerful. To give you an example, I had a little dog when I was a boy called Candy, a little rat terrier, and she and I were really, really close. And now, in the recent years, I will have situations happen when I'm asleep in bed and I'll be petting Candy, stroking her back like I always did. And then it'll occur to me, I wonder how old she is now. Candy must be a little old. And then I think to myself, well, wait a minute, she's over 60. How could she be that old? And then I come to full wakefulness and Candy's gone, of course. Candy's not there. But Candy visited me with a vision a few years ago in 2009 that my wife Anne was very much alive then, and she was a master interpreter of dreams among many other skills. And she said, as soon as I described this place that Candy had showed me in the dream, she said, Whitley, it's a warning. A few months later, we were actually driving through that location. And everything came together just as it had been in the vision. And she said, this is it. Pull off the road. We're going to be killed right now. And we pulled off, and a car raced past us at breakneck speed. It never saw us because I was confused by the rental car I was in and the fact that I was in England driving on the wrong side of the road as far as I was concerned. And I had not had my lights on without realizing it. It was night. So these animals, this particular type of animal, the canines, very important to me. I could go on, but my listeners already know the stories.
Well, you know, I think everybody in the listening audience who has a dog also appreciates wolf. Dog is still wolf. That is, we've just bred out of them certain tendencies. That's why it's so dangerous and wrong to be doing these mixed breed of dog-wolf, because it harms both the species and the human. Wolves are wolves and dogs are dogs, and there's a reason for that. But it's interesting about the dream of your dog, because what I discovered without knowing it when I began, and I've always loved wolves and I always have dogs, I have since I was, you know, born basically, is that they are guardians of the threshold. They literally are guardians of us when we are being born and guardians over us when we die. And I learned this through a series of dreams with underground caves, and it took me days and days to figure out what they were telling me. And what they finally were telling me was that the dog, the wolf, or the, I'm sorry, the animal that we have always called Anubis and has been referred to as a jackal is not a jackal, it's a wolf. And the wolf, and that was since discovered, as they told me in my dream, then a few days later I Googled wolf as Anubis, and sure enough, in 2014 or something, there was a DNA study that showed what everybody thought was a jackal is actually a gray wolf. So Anubis, who the Egyptians have always revered as the guardian of the dead, but they're also, what they showed me, guardian of the living or of the born, is the wolf. And the wolf was really interesting because it was insistent on telling me that it had relationships with coyote, but not fox. And I looked that up. And this is what I would do. The animals would give me information in my dreams, and then the following days I'd go look it up online or in a book and see if they were right. And it turned out that genetically they're right. Wolf and coyote are related, but they're not related to fox. And the wolf, interestingly enough, is a guardian. The Japanese believe the wolf walks us home at night until we reach safety.
So the opposite of Red Riding Hood.
Well, I know, exactly. And by the time that story appeared, wolves had been extinct in Europe already a couple hundred years.
And we were already separating from animals. We were becoming a different, something different then.
We didn't believe, there was a human entitlement notion, this notion that was actually a misinterpretation of all of Darwin's work, because Darwin actually wrote the most important thing about his work is that there is no human species entitlement. He believed that we and the animals just have different cultures. It would be like going to a foreign country and not knowing the language, but you recognize that they're eating, they're sleeping, they're playing, they're building. The same thing with the animals. They are not different from us. They have a different purpose. Meaning, okay, they don't build cities. No, they build whole ecosystems. Nobody has to go to school for that other than being with their mothers. And in all these animals, like the wolf, you know, people say that, you know, they're bred for life. That's not true. There's a male alpha and a female alpha. But the thing we know about wolf, whose lifespan is about 25 years, they're in packs from 8 to 30 generally, is that they are real shapeshifters, meaning humans and wolves, as they told me, get each other, do each other. And shamans, traditionally in all the indigenous peoples, have wolf culture. And anybody who has wolf as their totem or bear as their totem or something will never harm that particular animal. So wolf is regarded as the guardian of the Milky Way road. And it's interesting because elephant is considered the guardian of the Milky Way. So we're talking about animals that when they came into relations with our predecessors, prehistory humans who were shamanic, who understood everything, this massive signaling system, understood that these are our allies. These are our teachers. These are our elders. They've been here millions of years.
Well, yeah, much longer than we have. We've only, this species of human being has only been around for probably 100,000 years, the ones, us.
Yeah, and even our giant selves, which the Smithsonian and others sort of buried in history, Matata talked about, was when the giants were on Earth and the meteorites came and destroyed those first bad giants, and then giants who bred with humans, some of them were preserved, and they were good human giants, and Of course, it sounds like the Bible story of there were, you know, giants among us, etc. I think with all of these animals, like elephant, who the Buddhists and the Hindus worship and revere, they have a lifespan common to a human, an 80-year lifespan. And when we think about the obliteration of their cultures, when people go in there with machine guns and machetes and kill the mothers and the babies and the fathers, these babies stay with their herds, the males, until they're 12 years old. And then they go and mate. The females stay in their herd the entire lifetime. And so what they teach us is this incredible longevity of compassionate action. You know, they are very clear-minded, and Buddhism is really a wonderful place to go if you want to study the real history and purpose of the elephant, because Buddha was even said to have incarnated as an elephant before he was the Buddha. And the way he would look at people is he'd turn all the way around the way an elephant does, and they would call that his Buddha look. And when you think about the elephant and the ecosystem it preserves in the savannas and the woodlands, they open up the forest canopy, they create the wallowing water holes for all the other animals, they disperse more seed than any other animal, they're like bioengineers. We're really talking about sacred species who preserve entire ecosystems, whom without will collapse. And if we preserve these mammals and their ecosystems and try to restore them to their rightful place in the lands and stop appropriating it and destroying it, they can help us keep this planet intact while we go through earth changes and climate change.
But will that happen? Because right now, I mean, frankly, most people are facing into their cell phones and completely dissociated from the world around them. And most people, yeah, you know, this is a very unique audience on this show.
I'm sure it is.
Oh,
and
it
that's
is.
The good news is that to everybody listening, you are the answer. And
that's
each
right.
Of us are in our locations where we live. You know, there was a period in the 80s where it was all think globally. And yes, we're a global community and we're all connected through the cosmic satellite of consciousness. And our cells make us all cell phones anyway. Everything we're representing in technology, we already have the psi abilities to do between ourselves. So I think I'd like to share one really interesting story. After this most recent hurricane, I had a chance to interview Judith McGarry, who runs Farm and Ranch Freedom, FARFA. And we were talking about after the storms, after the hurricanes came and hit Texas, what happened? Those communities that had CSA, community-sponsored agriculture, that had farm markets, that had co-ops, they were up in 3 days feeding each other while everybody else is waiting for the National Guard, for the federal government, for the state or local government. And their point is the same as the animals. We need to focus locally, all of us, everybody in the listening audience, wherever you live, get involved in your local community. When things come apart, who you have is in your local community. And the good news is as we build community, we're building in resiliency and survivability. It's really important. There's a beautiful group in the UK run by Helena Norberg Hodge. It's called localfutures.com, or it might be localfutures.org. I'm not sure. They do an exquisite job of demonstrating how every place they have focused around the world on restoring local economies, local agriculture, sustainable permaculture, et cetera, getting rid of the GMOs. Those communities are starting to thrive with local businesses and local wherewithal. And that's what the animals are telling us, not to just save as many of them as you can by supporting the organizations that preserve the elephant, the wolf, the bear, the lion, the buffalo, but for us to preserve our local ecosystems. And that's where our power lies, and that's where our job arises from.
And yet people feel helpless. That's why a lot of people are going to tune this show out, because you're saying to them to do something they think they can't do.
But they can pray. And prayer, as we know from the Spindrift and other institutes who have studied it, are like particle and wave. The wave
Tell us a little bit about why it works.
Well, the way prayer works, is that what you were asking?
Yeah, because people pray.
Yeah,
you know, they've got cancer, they pray, nothing happens, et cetera, and so forth. Mostly.
It does happen. What happens, though, is we don't always get the outcome we want. You know, there's a big difference between desire and need. And what they found in studying prayer over decades of research on mung beans and other living systems is those prayers that were the least nonspecific, the least goal-directed example, you know, Uncle John has a broken ankle, and you go, oh, may Uncle John's ankle heal. The more effective prayer is, may divine right order be restored for Uncle John. They found, without a doubt, that one is particle and one is wave. When you do a particle prayer, it's goal-directed. You are asking for a particular outcome. That's a very short time frame. It's a particle. If you do a wave prayer, which means riding the wave, like in the ocean, you know how long they last, and you get on the curve, and you go in the curl, and it goes to the shore, that's thy will be done. It's talking about our humility and our regard for the interconnectedness of all life, and that our attention as humans and our intention as humans is the guiding light. So if we intend good, it's not important to try to control the outcome. That good supersedes anything because it even goes beyond our lifetime. And Elephant taught us that in this book. Is anything any of us do that's good? It can be just smiling at somebody who looks sad in the grocery store, or saying a prayer for the people impacted by a hurricane, or hoping for the restoration of your local political spectrum, whatever it is. These things are real. They just might not manifest in our timeline. And that's why at the end of my book, White Spirit Animals, Prophets of Change, I've included Stephen Schwartz, whom I know you know, has written a book called The Eight Laws of Change. And in it, he talks about the way the Quakers and others have used this principle of knowing that things go beyond our own lifetime. We shouldn't have any cherished outcome. We have to work together. We have to know that doing good is good no matter when or where it manifests. And that's really the truth. So it's easy to get depressed. Don't watch the news. I'm telling you, it's a mind control apparatus that is so destructive to our spirit and so destructive to our love. I used to be in the media full time. I was one of those nasty covering ones that I had to do all this horrible political whistleblowing. And I have found by not watching it, I can stay in my heart and move more in a heart path, which is what we really need to restore.
And you decided to, you moved out of that. Why did you leave?
I was heartbroken. After 10 years of being a whistleblower on the CIA, the FBI, Waco, Ruby Ridge, the administrations from Bush to Clinton, etc., I just found that the darkness was so dark and there was such delight in covering it to monopolize consciousness, to keep us at each other and polarized, that was the whole purpose of packaged news is packaged for advertisement. It's not packaged for information. It's packaged to keep us polarized, to keep our emotions on alert, to keep our adrenaline glands flying. And if you watch repeated stories over and over that make you feel sad, that have horror and tragedy, you are in a continual pattern of fight or flight. So in order to overcome that, you really have to focus your consciousness on things that are uplifting. And that can be as simple as looking at a beautiful flower or going out and feeding the birds. Or sending a $5 check to a local nonprofit. So there are ways to keep our spirits high. It's not that it's not a daily challenge for me as well, but it's very important not to get monopolized by media whose job really is to keep us in balance, because that's how they keep their listeners, their viewers.
Yeah, that is how. They keep people by disturbing them, by frightening them.
Well, yes.
And a lot of it is meaningless. It just, you know, it's dark for the sake of dark. They glue you to the screen that way. I'm very careful with it too. I don't want to listen to too much of that because it's an endless horror. But that said, let's go back to the animals. We've talked about wolf and bear. Let's talk now about elephant, which is a really fascinating one too.
Oh, I love the elephant. I mean, she is just so magnificent. As I mentioned, their lifespan is the same as our own. And the males stay with the herd until they're 9 or 12, and then they go mate. They're all weaned at 4. But the African elephant has a trunk like a hand, and they have this ability to do so many different things. That, like a human, they can control. And the elephant, the beauty of the elephant is their compassion. You know, they have the capacity to kill any human they come in contact with, very simply. And the truth is, even though they have occasionally, though very rarely, taken out their anger on a mayhoot who has abused them, which they all have in order to break them, and I talk about that in the book, it's a horrific reality of how we break their spirit, so that when you go to a zoo and you see an elephant pacing or head bobbing, that's neurotic behavior. That's not a healthy elephant. That's an elephant who's been broken, as are all the elephants in the zoos and circuses. So it's great news that, you know, Ringling Brothers is no longer to use elephants, and New York has just passed a law, no more elephants in the circuses or entertainment.
Yeah, well, Ringling Brothers closed down when they had to quit the elephants.
Well, the important thing is that these are grand teachers of compassionate action, and they, you know, as I mentioned, they're guardians of the Milky Way. There's a beautiful story about a guy called the Elephant Whisperer, Lawrence Anthony. When he passed away, elephants who hadn't been to his reserve in a really long time showed up at his funeral. And every year on the anniversary of his death, they come and show up at his home. And it's because of telepathy. They remembered how kind he was when he saved them from destruction. You know, there's a beautiful story I tell in the book about Charlie Rose and Senator John Warner, who I dreamt about three nights in a row. I couldn't figure out who they were, and it turned out they had elephant-related stories. So that's the elephant. And who haven't we talked about? The buffalo.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the buffalo is our national mammal. Thank you, our wonderful President Obama. The buffalo live 40 to 50 years. The males are weaned, and they go off in their own cluster, but the females stay in the herd their entire lives. They also, like the elephant, create these watering holes, but their main job is to reinvigorate the soil and human spirit. You know, there's a great tale in the Lakota tradition of the Lakota buffalo calf woman, and this is prophecy that she would return at a time of human need and earth changes, and she is returning in the guise of the white buffalo. I tell some stories about a runaway horse that the buffalo helped me find, but Cynthia Hart, who runs the White Bison Association, whitebisonassociation.org, has spent 16 years taking her herd of white and brown buffalo where they tell her to go. And wherever she's taken them, rain has followed. They're finally going to locate their home near the mounds in Ohio with an ecological center. But the buffalo, and the good news is that not only do they reinvigorate the soil, but they invigorate our spirit. You know, they of all the mammals in our lifetime and in prehistory were willing to give up their lives for the sake of the people that live with them, all the indigenous peoples. So buffalo is our brother, is our sister. And the fact that there are now, I call it buffalo rising, and that there's an effort to protect buffalo in this country is a great sign. So what I'd like to say to the issue of what do you do when you despair, remember we're on an elevator that's still going down to the basement. That's the tree of life. We're about to go down to the bottom of the tree of life. But at the same time, that elevator's already going up. So just remind yourself at a time when you feel desperate that there's nothing that you can do, stop for a moment, have a pleasant thought, speak a prayer for your environment, speak a prayer for the trees in your backyard. And each of us, if each of us take care of our dogs and our cats and our birds and all the animals in our environment, we are already contributing to the positive change.
So let's now go on to the signs, the giants, white dragons, the stories of extinction and restoration that you talk about toward the end of the book. And being in this extinction, the sixth extinction, and, you know, there's a lot of controversy about when it started. I believe myself that it started about nearly 3 million years ago when Central America rose up out of the ocean, and the great circum-equatorial current that had been keeping the climate stable for millions of years was interrupted, and this period of climate instability characterized by cyclical glaciations came, and the number of animal species on the planet began declining then, and plant species, and has been ever since. What we're really in now is not an extinction caused by man, but an extinction climax that has been intensified by the human presence and made into something that is going to be ultimately as profound as the greatest extinctions we've ever known.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at the dinosaurs and that extinction, which is they call the last extinction 65 million years ago, we used to have a background rate of about 1 to 5 species a year would disappear. And now we're losing species at 1,000 to 10,000 times the background rate.
That's right.
So that means 30 to 50% of all species will probably be extinct by mid-century. That's not far away, folks. That's less than 1 year.
No, it's not. I mean, I remember the last mid-century very well. But, you know, I mean, we have, and we have this is piling up. Like, it's just been being in the process of being discovered that something like 70% of the insect species in Northern Europe are gone. Just like that. No one noticed. They just disappeared in the past 10 years.
Yeah, and as I joke, if we lost a football team and a soccer team and a basketball team and a baseball league, you know, one after another each week, the whole world would be in an uproar. What does that tell us about us?
Well, it tells us that we're standing at the edge of a cliff, and we don't understand
games.
Is that there's not much below where we are at all. We're on an overhang that seems like solid ground. Of course, after the first shuddering of the Titanic, no one was really very concerned. But anyway, let's talk about the giants, the white dragons, and these signs and what they mean. Where do these signs come from?
Well, there are a lot of different ones. Whether it's somebody watching climate change, that's a sign, or somebody realizing the degree to which we are unprepared for famine, that's a sign. We have 70 days worth of food supply stored away on this planet. That's about it. I mean, that's just insane. We're destroying our seed bank with GMOs. That's why seed saving is so important. Everybody in their own state, everybody in your own home, if you can, grow your own food, see what it's like, learn how to do it. I think all of these things are telling us, as you point out, Whitley, and it's important to remember, civilizations rise and fall. But what we're challenged to do is change. We're challenged to, it's not about dying. We all are going to die. We're all going to leave our physical shells behind, as are all these animals that currently have bodies. It's a question of how we die and what we die for that we take to the other side and then start in the next round. So the purpose of this lesson is for us to come to loving union. That's the point. The animals are coming to us and telling us, look, okay, there used to be white dragons that lived next to the white lions, that lived next to the white bears in the caves during the Ice Age. But now we're facing an episode of instability. And as I mentioned in Texas, where they already had CSAs and farmers markets, they were up and running within 3 days of disaster, taking care of each other. The message is what Bear said, prepare. Prepare now. We have so many millions, and in the future will be billions of people roaming around this planet with no home. We already have I can't remember the statistic, but it's really high. It's something like 30% of us are already roaming the earth due to poverty, famine, and war. We're just living in a very unstable time, but the richness of it is, what do we want to create? As Rudolf Steiner said, all of our good deeds, all of our good thoughts, all of our good emotions are actually shaping the future now. So we may not be able to see the full fulfillment of what it is we want to see, Whitley, of stabilizing the earth and saving the animals and seeing peace on earth, which is the buffalo's greatest talent, by the way, to bring us to peace and prayer. And that's, I love the buffalo, is that that's our challenge, is what kind of humans do we want to be during difficult times? And that's the question. It's not will we survive. Lots of us aren't going to. Millions, if not billions, of humans are going to disappear over the coming century. That's not the issue. The issue is, what kind of consciousness do we want to embed future generations with, who will incarnate on the wave of our love?
Well, you know, that's a very deep and fundamental question. I've never thought of it or heard it spoken in quite that way, Zoe. Can you expand on it? You know, what do we want? What would you say the answer is?
The answer is unity. Unity, consciousness, inclusiveness, humility for each one of us, loving reverence for all that's around us, and to appreciate that we're all connected. And as I said at one point, you know, just a smile to somebody could change that person's life for the week. And you don't know if that's the moment that's going to prevent them from getting in their car and having road rage. We don't know the impact of our good. What we do know, and as Elephant taught me, is that the animals remember every good action and intention of every human. That was the Charlie Rose dream and the Senator Warner, because they both had this contact with an elephant named Jewel. And the other had, Charlie Rose had done a program on stopping the barbaric trade in ivory and the killing of all these herds. The elephant was telling me, don't ever underestimate the power of your good thoughts. We know scientifically that happiness is contagious. Thinking a good thought of somebody suffering literally elevates that other person, and it elevates the sender. So there's never a loss. We're either emanating or receiving, always. We're all biocapacitors. And the truth is all our actions are selfish or selfless. Generally, they're a combination of the two. But the more selfless we can be and the more brave our intention to be loving regard for other, the better the world will be, maybe not in our lifetime. But it will get better because that's the natural unfoldment. And in about 200 years, we start the rise of the Tree of Life, according to Kabbalah. And during this period, we will start to see women come to the fore. We will start to see the essence of matriarchy is better restored. And then we'll start to do the great rebuilding of the Earth Project, which we will have to do. But in the meantime, while things come apart, as the Texan showed us, who had CSAs and had food markets and farmers markets, the more we can pay attention to our local lives and our individual households and our individual interior beings, because that's what the world is reflecting, who each of us is an interior landscape, the better the world will be. So it's ultimately about self-management, us becoming self-managed humans who try really to do the best we can and not to judge ourselves. You know, if we make a mistake and we don't fulfill something, it's okay. Get up and try again the next day.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is a lot of hope in the world in the sense that there are countries that are taking a very different, going down a very different road than the United States.
Absolutely.
China, for example, is absolutely doing amazing things. They're transforming their whole nation.
Exactly.
Into a non-polluting country, one of the great polluters in all history.
Yep.
And the Europeans, of course, are far ahead of us. With an intelligent program to do what they can to save this planet. And in fact, folks, if you go on Unknown Country and go to the Insight section, you'll see a story which I wrote, which is lays out all of the things, the good things that are being done and that are happening. And you know something interesting about that, Zoe? Because it's about climate change, almost nobody read it. It had the lowest readership on Unknown Country of any story in years.
Interesting.
Yeah, because people are frightened. They're frozen.
Well, and yeah, I think that's true. And that's what happens with a lot of fear, is you just stick your head in the sand and pretend it's not
right.
Happening.
But well, in our case, the sand is called a cell phone. We stick your head in the cell phone.
Well, the good news is that if we can just relax and use our dreams as I did with the animals, we can know what to do, and animals will help us, as will the trees, as will the insects that are here, as will the living waters. I mean, everything that's alive, and I'd like to say everything that's not manifest, is on the same team. We're on the team of love and unity, and that's why so many quantum physicists talk about, and the Mayas talk about, our moving into unity consciousness. We are. And there's revealed good and concealed good, as they teach in Kabbalah. Revealed good is when we're all happy, things are going great. Concealed good is actually a better greatness. It's what's hidden in the darkness, like this Jupiter and Scorpio we're now moving into. There is real good in this tragedy that we're going through, which is for us to mature. And if we can appreciate it.
It's time. We need to do that.
We've
been kids long enough. And in
yes,
a sense,
exactly.
You know what's happening. It's like what happens in a womb toward the end of a child's term. The waters become more difficult. The situation is the child becomes very packed and tight in the womb.
Yeah.
It becomes very confining. And then the next thing you know, a catastrophe happens to the baby. The waters are all gone. The baby is suffocating, can't get out. And bang, then the baby is plunged into this bright, loud, clanging world that he can't even see clearly.
Yeah, but it comes into the arms of love.
And then come the arms of love.
Right.
And all I can say, folks, as we, the two of us, leave this show, let's hope that when baby man is born, there are going to be some arms of love, and I think we're going to find that and find those arms in the animal world. So Hieronymus, white spirit animals, prophets of change, words from a wise woman who is deep, deep into the living world of spirit. Zoe, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Whitley. It was a great pleasure.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.